Well, it's time for a very special edition of Changing Australia Today. Andrew Denton says that he's an introvert trapped in an extrovert's career. He's been one of Australia's creative forces as a radio and TV comedian, a Walkley award-winning interviewer, and a producer of hit shows such as Gruen, Hungry Beast and The Chaser. But witnessing the painful death of his dad led him to the work that may have his biggest impact, and that is as a tireless advocate for end-of-life choice. Today, the Government of the Northern Territory will introduce voluntary assisted dying laws to Parliament. If the laws pass, the Territory will be the final jurisdiction in the country to introduce assisted dying after a decades-long fight by campaigners such as Andrew Denton. Andrew is the founder of Go Gentle Australia, and I'm very pleased to say as my guest today on Changing Australia. Andrew, welcome back to Radio National.
Thanks, Sally. Lovely to be here.
I'll start with an impossible question. What makes a good death, Andrew?
As a beautiful palliative care nurse and former Catholic nun said to me, a good death is the death that you want. So it's one where you get to farewell the world as you are, not as someone torn apart by disease or having lost competency or consciousness. Ideally, one where you're surrounded with the people who love you and who you love. And, you know, in the case of some of the people that have gone through voluntary assisted dying, maybe it's playing your favourite music or it's on a beach. But it's to die as you are and who you want to be and to leave that memory behind.
How did the death of your dad, Andrew, your dad, Kit, how did that really get you thinking about these issues and trying to come up with something better that matches the needs of the person who may be ill but also the family as well?
Look, I think Dad's death was typical of many. He was in a regional hospital. They did their best, but their best wasn't enough. It didn't matter how much pain relief they threw at him, it wasn't enough. And at the time, we were traumatised. Death is traumatising, but we also, we assume this is how it goes. I mean, they're experts at this and that's how death goes. It wasn't until many years later I read an article in a magazine by an Australian author whose father was Dutch. And in the Netherlands, they've had laws, what they call euthanasia, for almost 50 years now. And she described his final week. He had cancer. And a bit as I was answering your first question, his final week before the doctors came to assist him to die was with friends and family, farewelling people, honouring people, being honoured by them. He spent his last night listening at dinner with his family, listening to his favourite music, sitting outside looking at the stars. And then the next morning, the doctors came and they assisted him to die. And it was when I read this, I thought, well, that seems both humane and sensible. Why did Margareta's father have that option and why did my father not? So that's what set me on the course.
Do you have any conversations with people, and it sounds like an interesting way to come at it, but do some people say to you that ethically, philosophically, that death should be painful if that's what it's going to be? We shouldn't get in the way.
Absolutely, and I respect that. There are, you know, I've spoken to people that are seriously ill that intend to go all the way through that, and often that's faith. Faith will take you there, and I deeply respect that, and I think people are entitled to that view. But many people don't want that, and I think what really bothers me in this conversation is that there are people not just in, obviously, faith, but in the medical profession who represent that faith, who actually subscribe to a thing called suffering theology, which was pretty well expressed by the Sydney Archbishop Anthony Fisher to the ABC about a decade ago, which says that our suffering joins us to Christ's suffering and in that way makes a contribution to the universe, so it's not meaningless. Now, as I say, that's a personal belief and I totally respect that. But when that comes into medicine and when that view is imposed on people who are dying and who are suffering, I think that's deeply inappropriate.
What do we know about what happens when voluntary assisted dying is available? Is it available in an equitable way, Andrew?
No. Yes and no. First of all, it depends. You may be in the middle of Melbourne, as the husband of a woman I spoke to some years ago was. She had motor neurone disease and Because it's a neurological disease, she needed three doctors to confirm that she met the guidelines of having 12 months or less to live. And even though she lived in the middle of Melbourne, I think her GP tried more than 20 specialists. None of them would come on board. They just disapproved. And she ended up dying before she could get the medication. So if you live in a rural or remote district, then it gets harder and harder still, because there's less and less doctors. There's only a very small percentage of our health professional workforce involved in voluntary assisted dying care, and they're under a great deal of pressure. So, look, it's not easy, and what makes it even harder is that their entire institutions, mostly faith-based ones, but not just them, who object to voluntary assisted dying, who go out of their way to impede or obstruct or discourage people from this course. There are individual doctors who do the same. And I'm sorry to say there continues to be, despite this being a valid legal choice, some truly terrible behaviour by institutions and individuals towards people that are pursuing their legal right to assisted dying.
What's the reality of the process of voluntary assisted dying? It's one thing to have the philosophical or legal debate, but once it's available, it's going to be different for different people. Are there complications there? There might be some members of the family who support what's going on, others who don't. Do some people change their minds sometimes, Andrew?
Yeah, it's extraordinary to me. Look, the two main qualifications for pursuing voluntary assisted dying, and this is the universal feedback we get, is courage and determination. And the first piece of courage is to actually ask yourself the question. Imagine asking yourself that question, am I so sick that I might seek help to die? Then when you've asked yourself that question, you have to raise it to the people who care for you most, your family, and you're quite right. These laws are built around making sure that they're voluntary and that you're mentally competent, to make sure that no one's coercing you into doing this, as they should be. But the only coercion that's been discovered in the 7 years they've been in operation is the other way. And firstly, it comes from the family. Don't do this. Please don't do this. Then you have to go and find a doctor, or two doctors in the case of the law, and sometimes three. So you have to go through all those difficulties I described earlier. Then you have to go through two assessment processes. You have to find witnesses who are not your family. You have to deal with a care navigator service. You have to deal with pharmacists. There are so many steps you have to take along the way, and at every step you have to demonstrate that you're mentally competent and that this is your voluntary choice. And it's a really difficult path to go through. And then at the end of all of that, Sally, you have to set a day when you say, well, this is the day where I'm going to say goodbye to everything I know and that I love and that I am. And to go through that whole pathway requires extraordinary courage and determination.
Andrew, how do you reflect on this role in advocacy, in your role as a broadcaster and a maker of content as well? It'd be easy to say one of the most popular figures in the country. This is a contentious area. Is it important for you to be liked, or have you stepped away from some of that? What's it been like to not be liked?
I made a show on the ABC once called Rantling, which was so disliked, Sally, I got used to it very quickly. No, being liked is not the point. This to me was always and is still always about social justice. I get very distressed by the deep injustices I still see being enacted in the name apparently of compassion and mercy and sometimes medicine. But having said that, one of the best things about pursuing this path, beyond the extraordinary people I've met and beyond it being an entirely new world to the one that I used to be involved in the media, is that I have also established some friendships with people who strongly disagree with me and vice versa. And I think that's good. It's important to be able to sit down with people who you don't agree with but still find a way to speak in a civilised fashion. And, I think there's a very forceful disability rights advocate who many of your listeners will have heard her name, Sam Connor. The first time I met Sam was in Adelaide about 10 years ago when I was first pursuing this, and she came up to me in the street outside Parliament House in a wheelchair and said, "Hi, I'm Sam Connor. You're trying to kill me." And we ended up having a long coffee with her and her friends. I learned a great deal about the very genuine issues people within the disability communities face at the hands of our medical community. And over the years, we've become what she calls frenemies. she's never going to agree with me on voluntary assisted dying, but we respect each other's view and we can talk.
Do your two worlds ever collide? Is there much humour in these final days sometimes? As human beings, we kind of have to laugh about the things we're sometimes frightened of.
Yeah, there is, and in unexpected ways. There is a Victorian VAD doctor called Nick Carr who assessed a man as eligible for assisted dying, and upon telling him that he would be eligible, the man turned to him and said, "Oh, doc, you're a lifesaver." and then there was another man in Victoria who the medication that you take at the end, sometimes you're injected, sometimes you drink, it's very bitter, extremely bitter. And he took his first sip and he turned to his family and said, "Oh, this shit will kill you."
Andrew, a few years ago you had some quite significant heart surgery yourself. The sense of your own mortality, did that change thinking for you as well?
Not especially, not in terms of this issue. I mean, really, it gave me a greater determination to live life to the full. I've lost a couple of friends this year in the entertainment industry, Sam Neill, Rob Hurst. That is more sobering. You know, we're all going down the conveyor belt and I can feel myself inching along a bit more each year. But no, I'm really driven by the remarkable stories I hear of both compassion and its opposite, and social justice. And I'll just give you one tiny example, which I heard just 2 days ago. There's a man right now in Victoria who has very advanced cancer, who has massive retention of fluid in his body. So any kind of movement is extremely difficult. He's in a faith-based hospital, and because they object to voluntary assisted dying, to have his assessments, to be assessed by the doctors whether or not he's eligible, they have to get him out of bed, put him in a wheelchair, every bit of it painful, and they're going to wheel him into the car park for his medical assessment. Now, you tell me in what world that is Christian or compassionate or good medicine. So it's that kind of thing that drives me still.
Andrew Denton, it's been so interesting to have you on Changing Australia today, and I'm sure like many other journalists, I've spent many years watching and observing your interviews and your interview technique as well. It's been lovely to have you on the program today. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thanks, Sally, and respect to you too.